You are listening to The Grandest Tour by The Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by iWocker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. iwoca.co.uk.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm joined by LB Squared again, Lionel Burney. Hello, Lionel.
Hello, Richard.
And Lizzie Banks.
Hello, Lionel and Richard.
Hello, Lizzie. Hope you're well. Well, here we are on the eve of the final day of the Giro d'Italia. The Vuelta's going on as well. Let's not forget that. But I think the Vuelta's probably going to catch fire next week, isn't it, when the Giro's over? Because we've got a tantalising prospect tomorrow of, for the first time ever, two riders going into a final time trial level on time. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about what happened today at Sestriere, about the time trial tomorrow in this episode. And we'll hear from a couple of our diarists as well. We'll also hear from Daniel Freeb in Spain. But can you give us the headlines from today, please, Lionel?
I can indeed, Richard. Yes, it was stage 20 to Sestriere. Well, over Sestriere and down and then over it again and then up to the finish at Sestriere. And the two riders that have emerged who will go head-to-head in tomorrow's time trial, Teo Gegenhardt and Jai Hindley, came to the line together. Ineos Grenadiers rider Teo Gegenhardt got the stage win just ahead of Jai Hindley. And as you say, Richard, they are level on time, but Hindley just nudges his way into the pink jersey on countback, taking into account the hundredths of a second from the two time trials that have been in this Giro so far. So Jai Hindley will wear the pink jersey and set off last in tomorrow's time trial in Milan. Hindley, of course, was not in the pink jersey at the start of the day. That was with his team leader Wilco Kelderman. Kelderman faltered the second time up the climb to Sestriere, and well, he's still third on GC, 1:32, but way too far back to still be in the overall picture. So we have this incredible shootout tomorrow. Yes, today's climb up to the finish was a bit of a goalless draw because both Hindley and Gegenhardt were probably thinking of what they might lose if they risk too much, rather than, you know, taking that risk and seeing whether they could put some time into the other. They perhaps suspected that they couldn't. Anyway, they will go to the time trial tomorrow and it will all be decided in Milan. I mean, you couldn't have written this at the start of the Giro. After the Tour de France culminated on the climb to La Planche des Belles Filles and we had that sensational win for Tadej Pogacar, I thought, well, we'll not see something like that again this year. But two riders level pegging going into the time trial is, well, I can't remember it happening in a Grand Tour, I think, because it's never happened in a Grand Tour.
Even you can't remember it, Lionel.
Meanwhile, over in the Vuelta, there was a stage win for Tim Wellens of Lotto Soudal. I mean, compared to the drama that's going on in the Giro at the moment, the Vuelta is playing somewhat second fiddle, isn't it? But as you say, Rich, there's an important stage tomorrow to Formigal. The GC will be keenly contested there. But at the moment, all eyes are on Italy.
You are listening to The Grandest Tour by The Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by iWocker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWocker. If you run a business, find out more at iWocker.co.uk. iwoca.co.uk.
Hi, my name is Mike Mooney. I run Hub Velo in Hackney, London. Probably much like any other small companies, cash flow is always an issue, especially in the cycling world, because it's very seasonal. So obviously in the spring and summer is a great time. Everyone wants to get on their bikes, they're riding, they're racing, they just want to be out, they're on holiday. And then in the winter month, business just drops off. It's like it gets the end of November and it's just like falling off a commercial cliff. Everything stops. It's very difficult to kind of maintain the business. We have the same staff, we have the same space, we have the same outgoings. So it's always very difficult to do that, to maintain the business with obviously a decreased amount of income. But we've managed to always work around it. Historically, the banks have not been as flexible as we would like them to have been. And then it all went pretty much kind of, I guess, digital and a bit faceless. And we didn't really have anyone that we could communicate with that understood us as people. And then I found out about Iwoka. I found them online. I'd read a couple of reviews, decided to get in contact with them. And they had everything that I didn't have from the bank. And I had someone that I could talk to. They understood our business. They were young, they were keen, they really wanted to help. It felt like the perfect partnership. It's just been great. I mean, we've got our first chunk of cash. We don't have an enormous amount of money with Iwoka. We don't really need an enormous amount of money. It's just to tide us over through that, as I say, that difficult period in the winter. I actually have a relationship with Iwoka. Someone I can talk to, I know them, I've been to see them. They ride bikes, they're young, they're dynamic. They're all the things that we didn't have before that we wanted, and that relationship has continued, and that's been really helpful for us.
Thanks very much indeed to Iwoka, our headline sponsor. We heard there from Mike Mooney of HubVelo, an Iwoka customer, also a very good friend of Tao Gegenhart. When Mike featured in the podcast before, Tao got in touch to say that he is a very good friend of his, and Mike's business partner at the shop was his reception teacher at primary school. So we thought we'd hear from Mike Mooney again in tonight's episode. We say thanks very much indeed to Iwoka for supporting us and supporting Mike Mooney and his business as well. If you have a small business and you'd like to find out what Iwoka might be able to do for you, go to iwoka.co.uk. Well, I suspect we're going to be talking a bit more about Tao Gegenhart today, tomorrow, and in the future. He, unbelievably, and I say that because, you know, his team in the Oscar Ideas came into this Giro to support Geraint Thomas. He crashed out in stage three. Gegenhart, I suppose, was a plan B on paper, but he lost quite a bit of time in those early stages. But somehow he's found himself, I mean, not somehow, he has found himself in arguably in pole position to win the Giro. He's level on time with Jai Hindley. The two big mountain stages in Stelvio on Thursday and Sestriere today, Rohan Dennis has played an absolutely key role in just making the stage really hard, losing people, losing Wilco Kelderman in particular. And Kelderman cracked again today, lost more time, and should hold on to the podium, but he's out of the pink jersey. His teammate at Sunweb, Jai Hindley, is in the pink jersey. Lizzie, what did you make of the stage today? Did it pan out as you expected, or were there any surprises for you today?
I think Rohan Dennis's ride was absolutely phenomenal once again. And I have to say, one of my most favourite bits of the whole race was the penultimate time up the climb. It was Rohan Dennis, Tao and Jai, and they were just kind of picking off the remnants of the breakaway as they climbed up to the top of Sestriere. And every time that they were coming, you could see the riders from the breakaway looking behind them and just being, you could see the cogs turning and them kind of thinking, oh shit, can you believe it? The Malia Rose has been dropped. seeing how all of that was working and just seeing his ride again, he really rode out of his skin. I thought that was amazing. But I have to say, I was a bit disappointed with the lack of fireworks. I really hoped we'd get some big attacks, but I'm kind of not surprised. I think that both Jai Hindley and Tao, I think that they're both quite new to this and they're both in a position that they never thought that they would find themselves in this Giro. And perhaps they, because they haven't been here before, they don't really know, not that they don't know what to do. Of course, they know what to do. They're both exceptional bike riders, but there's so much to lose for both of them. You know, they're on the cusp of, well, whatever happens, they're both on the cusp of the biggest result of their careers. And there's so much at stake that if you do the biggest attack and then you get the biggest counter and then you blow up and you lose that second place, is it really worth risking that? Maybe it's better to do a 95% attack and then still have the ability to go with the counter. So I was a little bit disappointed by the lack of fireworks. Again, it was really kind of watching riders go out the back of the race rather than watching them fire off the front. But it definitely didn't disappoint. And I think the fact that the organisers managed to recreate stage 20 from the original route, which was going to be even more spectacular, and create a route that allowed us to have such a spectacle today, I think that's a huge credit to the organisers too at such a late stage.
Yeah, I think the one thing you would think, you would think, given the stage 14 time trial, which was 34 kilometers long, and in which Theo Gegenhardt put more than a minute into Jai Hindley on that stage, you would think that it's a done deal. But if you look back at the Tirreno Adriatico at the start of the resumption after lockdown, the time trial stage at the end of the race was 10 kilometers long, San Benedetto del Toronto, pan flat. Tomorrow's stage is pan flat, 15 kilometers into Milan. In that Tirreno Adriatico stage, the gap between Gegenhardt and Hindley was just 6 seconds in Gegenhardt's favour. So whilst I was watching the stage, I was thinking, well, surely Hindley has to do something, whereas Theo Gegenhardt could afford to just follow the wheel and just not take any risks. But when you look at that Tirreno Adriatico time trial, perhaps Hindley was also thinking, well, maybe I'm in with a shout here anyway. The one caveat to all of this is that in neither of those time trials were those riders racing to win. So we really have so little to go on. And so when watching today's stage and seeing how they rode side by side, and at the very finish, incredible. I mean, their shoulders were almost touching, weren't they? It did look a little bit like Theo was trying to intimidate Jai by getting in very, very close to him.
Or maybe he was trying to recreate the famous Honkatil Poulidor photograph. He's a keen student of cycling history. I'm sure that was on his mind as he ran to the finish there.
I mean, for sure, tomorrow's time trial is going to be an absolute nail biter, and you can't underestimate the extra power that being in the Maglia Rosa will give you. Of course, they're both going to be using the same equipment tomorrow in terms of the skin suit, so that's really nice that you're not going to see one being disadvantaged by, an organisational skin suit, because they're both going to be in Castelli skin suit with Jai Hindley in the pink skin suit and with Theo in the white jersey looking after it for Jai. And yes, they're really, really close. Jai is quite a punchy rider as well. And, you know, the other thing that you have to think about in this scenario is they're going to be having to take risks. Quite often when you're the leader in a Grand Tour and you go into a time trial, you say, look, I'm not going to risk it in the corner because it's not worth gaining a quarter of a second, half a second, and actually end up losing 30 seconds because you hit the deck. Whereas neither of them can, you know, neither of them can back off in any corner in any section tomorrow. Of course, they're not going to, you know, take stupid risks, but you can't risk losing half a second here and half a second there when they both know it's so close and they're, you know, they're clearly both riding so well. And as we've seen the whole way, they've been perfectly matched. So it's going to be an absolute thriller. And also, we're going to see what happens behind, because Almeida had a fantastic ride today. I was so excited to see him attack and so thrilled to actually see some attacking taking place. And he's really the rider that's lit up the whole Giro for me. And I would say whatever happens, he's the rider of the Giro for me. And yeah, he wants to try and make it. He wants to try and step up into the higher places if he can. That's going to be a task, of course. And yeah, we'll see what happens in the time trial there. And is Wilco Kelderman going to crack even more in the time trial? Probably not. He'll probably have a decent day. But yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what the outcome is.
I was also impressed and slightly surprised to see Almeida ride like that, because I thought he might kind of fade away completely, as we sometimes see riders, you know, they use everything to try and hold on to the jersey as long as possible and then kind of collapse, and he hasn't done that at all. Very impressive, and augurs well, I think.
I think there what you see is his mental strength. And yeah, what happened when the first two GC groups split was you could see that Wilco Kelderman really took a mental hit there. And he was on the front for the first bit after the GC groups split. And then he kind of just, you know, eased off a little bit, and then the group swelled more and more and more. And by the time they'd got to the top of the penultimate ascent, you could really see how the momentum had totally gone from the second group on the road. They knew that they were no longer riding for the 1 and 2 on GC and that they were all battling it out for third. So kind of what was the point in giving it everything on the descent, because they weren't going to get that 1 and 2 spot. It was already gone. It was already up the road. They'd cracked on that penultimate time. So there was no way they weren't going to crack on the last time up if the three of them in the front, Dennis, Theo and Giles, went full gas, which of course they were going to do. So yeah, then they're all looking at each other on the flatter bits, nobody wants to work, and you saw Wilco Kelderman's head drop, and it's all kind of negative mental feedback, whereas for Almeida, he's like, look, I've got nothing to lose. And it was just such a great thing to see his attitude and to see his spirit. And he was absolutely pushing it all the way to the finish to see if he could get a podium spot. And yeah, that does look out of reach. But for him to come fifth, I think, is an incredible achievement.
We'll have to get the bleeping machine in operation tonight, won't we, Lionel? There was an interesting moment on the penultimate time up Sestria when Rohan Dennis went off the front. And there was just a moment where it looked like Teo couldn't hold his wheel. I don't know if that was just Dennis.
I think everybody's reading too much into this, because it could have been one of those things that Dennis just did a tiny acceleration. Maybe there was a kind of slight rise in the road, or I don't know, maybe Teo's taking the gel or something like that. And Teo didn't want to go with that acceleration, so Teo just kept riding at his steady pace and then came back to him. Because what you've got to remember is that every single time you do a tiny acceleration, it burns off a match or a tiny bit of a match. And if he doesn't need to do it, then why do it? If Dennis opens up a gap, then leave it for Jai Hindley to close it. Teo doesn't need to close it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. People were talking about this, certainly reacting on social media, and it did look dramatic, didn't it? But, you know, Teo could have told Rohan to slow down at any point, whereas Jai Hindley can't tell Rohan Dennis to slow down, or, you know... Well, he can, but not likely to be listened to. Although they are both Australians, of course, but not likely to carry much favour that. But no, I think the pair, I mean, Rohan Dennis, when he kept coming back as well on the final climb, obviously that indicated that Hindley and Gegenhardt weren't, you know, really sort of pulling out all the stops. But nevertheless, I mean, the morale dent to Hindley just to see Dennis coming back and knowing that he's just outnumbered, you know, it must play on, must have played on his mind, because, you know, Dennis was just incredibly strong. He just kept coming back each time.
Yeah, he would just, Jai would attack and then Dennis would just kind of sail past, and he was so rock steady on the bike. He's got such a beautiful, steady, you know, yeah, rock steady style. I don't know, I think there's any other way of putting it, that it really doesn't look like he's giving any effort, even though he's on the limit. And that can really crack you. You're like, oh, he goes again. Oh, shit, he's still here. He goes again. Oh, yeah, he's still here. And there's nothing that he can do to get rid of him.
It was like a horror.
He kept coming.
It was like
back,
a horror movie, yeah. Wasn't it? The monster can't kill the monster.
Just on that, Lizzie.
Or Rasputin. Dennis.
That is the sort of thing that would crack you. Because Hindley was making those efforts, and obviously he's expecting Gegenhardt to follow and be there, but perhaps not expecting Rohan Dennis to still, you know, not be dropped to the extent that that he could then come back and go straight back to the front again. It must have cast some doubt in Hindley's mind at that point.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously he'd seen how strong he was already on the Stelvio stage. I think the main thing is that if Dennis is still there right to the finish, then he knows that. But basically, before they got to the main point of the climb with, I think it was about 8-9K to go, before that, Teo was on Rohan Dennis's wheel. At that point, Teo thought, right, no, this is not the right place to be in. I know that Jai is going to attack at some point on this final climb. So he moved to one side. He let Jai Hindley take Rohan Dennis's wheel so that Teo was third position. And from third position, you are in the best possible position to see what's going to happen, to anticipate attack. You're never going to be on the back foot. You can tell by the way a rider's moving, just, you know, sometimes they make tiny movements on the bike and you think, right, they're going to go any second. If you are on the wheel instantaneously, then you lose nothing. If you hesitate and you have a split second, which you might be if you're second wheel, then they come past you with speed and then it is so much harder to get on the wheel. So really at about 9K to go, Teo made the best move he possibly could have done. And then, yeah, obviously having Rohan Dennis there the whole time, Jai would have known that if Rohan Dennis was there for the lead out, then there was kind of no way that he could have won the sprint, because Teo would have been coming from the best position. Obviously, eventually, Jai had attacked so hard that Rohan finally wasn't able to follow and it was just the two of them. But again, Teo did the best thing coming from behind and timed the sprint to perfection. But I have to say, Jai was actually coming with speed, and had the sprint been a little bit longer, I think he might have come round him. But it wasn't any longer. Teo won, and yeah, it was just a brilliant showdown.
And just to go roll back a little bit, because there was that time bonus sprint as well, wasn't there? And at that point, I mean, Jai Hindley took that. The other day on the Stelvio stage, we saw Gegan Hart take it and then Rowan Dennis in second place. And Hindley did appear to not really have his wits about him at that point. But again, we're talking with a bit of hindsight here, aren't we? At that point, you know, Wilco Kelderman was still the best card that Sunweb had to play. So perhaps he didn't think it was that important.
Well, absolutely. And I would say that all that happened today was that perhaps Teo wasn't concentrating. It's so easy to sit from the sofa and say, oh, why didn't Teo win that sprint? But you've got to remember, these guys are going full gas. They've been going full gas for the last 20 days and they're absolutely exhausted. Although you've got the team car saying, don't forget there's a sprint here, it's so easy to just forget for a moment. You're looking down at your handlebars, you're giving it everything to go, and then, oh, and it's literally that split second where he jumps and you go, oh God, I'm too late. And then at that point, is it really worth making so much of an effort when you know you're not actually going to get, you're not going to come around him? So it's better to just kind of roll through, take the second place, rather than giving an effort to still take second place, but it'll be a little bit closer than it was before. So yeah, I mean, mistakes happen. Everybody's human. And it, I really thought about that. And I think that probably what happened is he just kind of, I don't know, mistimed it or just forgot where it was. Or,
well,
yeah, I don't know.
It's a no-brainer. Far, far better to win the stage, take the bigger time bonus at the finish than worry about the smaller one down the road. So
I mean, for sure, it's better to take both and then he would have been in pink. But perhaps it's better for him to not be in pink and have slightly less pressure going into tomorrow. So we'll see.
Just before we talk about tomorrow's stage, you were mentioning, Lizzie, about Almeida. I thought De Koenig Quickstep had a fantastic day today. There was a period where Davide Ballerini was chasing the Movistar rider Rubio, and then in the next group they had two riders, Honore and Peter Seri. And Seri was in, well, he kind of got up the road and was on the coattails of the Dennis Express for a while, wasn't he, before falling back. And then we saw James Knox, you know, doing an incredible job for Almeida before he launched that attack. And you know, they really haven't taken losing the pink jersey lying down by any stretch.
No, absolutely. The way De Koenig Quickstep rode today, they treated it like a proper bike race, and they they went out there to try and get onto the podium and they weren't able to do that. But I think that they basically died trying and they did everything that they could. They put as many men in the break as they could. They literally did everything that they could to try and help Almeida get as high up in the classification as he could. And I think that, yeah, it was really respectful to the race. And that's the way I want to see bike races raced. I love to race in an attacking style and I love to watch attacking bike races. And I think that it's the most exciting type of bike racing to watch. And yeah, I hope we're going to see some more of that in the Vuelta later on in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. Well, it seems like a good moment to hear from our Samuel Pepys, our Alan Bennett, James Knox, who, as you say, had a great ride today. He's actually 14th overall on GC. You know, should be there or thereabouts after the time trial tomorrow. Let's hear what James had to say about the penultimate stage.
Stage 20, done. Happy to get that one out of the way. I'm on the bus heading towards Milan now. Just generally enjoying what feels like I haven't finished the Giro, even though we've got 15 kilometers to go tomorrow. And very happy with today's work. Already getting stuck into a beer. Feel like I deserve it, to be honest. Plan was to try and get in the breakaway. Didn't manage that. But we did have three riders in there. And then when the race opened up with Ineos exploding it to pieces, did my best to get back to Joao. Stayed with him, gave it my all in that bottom of the last climb, and obviously was very happy with the legs, felt like it was going well. And we timed it well with catching guys from the break who didn't have a shot at the stage win at the end. But yeah, all in all, lovely day out for myself to finish off the Giro, and I think we can come away feeling pretty satisfied with what we've done in the last 3 weeks. Obviously, João and Fausto have got to finish it off tomorrow. Still in the top 10. João's not too far off Bilbao for fourth, but we couldn't. Yeah, I think we gave it everything there to try and put Kelderman and Bilbao under pressure to jump up a bit more, and Drow gave a big attack, but yeah, I think that was about as much as we could do. And yeah, what else to say? Just nice feeling getting towards the end of a grand tour. Enjoy tomorrow. Well, I enjoy tonight first, enjoy tomorrow, and yeah, season's almost done. Only other thing I can think of is that I had family holidays as a kid with some family friends in Briançon, and when I think I was 13 or 14, we took the car over to Susa, rode over the Finestra, all the way up Sestriere, and then Montgenèvre down into Briançon. And so I did remember the roads, and that drag from all the way up to Sestriere goes on and on and on, and then yeah, hard laps to finish here today, but pretty amazing race too, with Teo and Jai joint on time going into tomorrow's TT. Both of them good friends, so yeah, strange situation in that sense, but just wish them both the best. May the best man win, so to speak. Yeah, but it's been a tough Giro. Yeah. I haven't really got too much to say today, to be honest. Felt like I've left it out there on the road. There's been many, many, many kind messages. I'll still do an audio diary tomorrow, obviously, but over the last 2.5 weeks, a lot of nice messages, all of which I appreciate. Any questions for tomorrow, get them in last minute, and I'll try and answer them, but that's my bit for today. So, thanks again.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Well, a couple of days ago, we announced that we are partnering with Lacquer to create a community within a community. Lacquer, of course, is collective bike insurance made especially for cyclists to cover your bike and equipment on and off the bike. They've transformed the traditional insurance model to provide customers with a fairer, collective-driven approach to cycle insurance. So say goodbye to fixed upfront premiums. Instead, your monthly contributions are based on the collective's claims that month, and your monthly price is capped, so the savings are all for you. And now Lacquer have some big news, because they're launching their first ever crowdfunding campaign, and they're offering equity in Lacquer for anyone who wants to sign up. Cyclists have helped Lacquer bring a much better model of insurance to the community of cyclists who have signed up, and that's why they want to invite anyone to join the ride. So if as you're a listener to the Cycling Podcast, you can own a part of Lacquer and invest in the future of the company from as little as £10, and then become a part of this big collective community. So to register and find out more about Lacquer's crowdfunding, head to www.lacquer.co. that's LAKA.co. Remember that when investing, your capital is at risk. This announcement was approved by Cedars. That's the technical kind of disclaimer bit. Richard, I'm sure you'll be investing a tenner, won't you?
Certainly, Lionel. I'm already a Lacquer customer, of course. But yeah, I can maybe spare a tenner. If you do it, I'll do it. How about that?
Okay, I'll match you, Richard. Matching a Scotsman's investment.
Oh, here we go.
Amazing.
back to the Giro. Just we will get onto the Vuelta, I promise. We're going to hear from Daniel. I mean, Lizzie, you were disappointed at the lack of fireworks. It's worth saying, you know, Jai Hindley and Teo Gegenhardt have looked very, very good on these two mountain stages, and Hindley's maybe even the bigger surprise. I spoke to him at the Giro last year, because we did a little feature on a few survivors of the baby Giro from 2017, when he was third in that race. Pavel Sivakov was the winner, Scott Davis was fourth, Mark Padun was fifth, Nielsen Paulus was sixth, and Lewis Hamilton was second. He was also riding extremely well at this Giro before Mitch and Scott unfortunately had to pull out. Who knows what might have happened had they not pulled out, because he looked incredibly good on Etna. But Jai...
And Jumbo-Visma, of course.
And Jumbo-Visma pulled out as well, yeah. But I mean, Jai Hindley has really sort of come of age here. He's only 24 years old. On the climbs, he's looked, you know, the real deal. And I'm sure he's got a great future, and he's got a great future on that team, which is a really proven developer of young talent. But the other guy today, of course, is Wilco Kelderman, who was in the pink jersey and cracked again, sort of second big mountain day in a row, I suppose. And I mean, you know, there was some talk a couple of days ago on the Stelvio whether Jai Hindley should have waited for him or not. I think that was put to bed today. He might have helped him lose, you know, a bit less time, but it wouldn't have been enough, I don't think, for him to win the Giro tomorrow in Milan. But Kelderman obviously had a disappointing day today. He spoke at the finish. He's very gracious, I thought. Here he is at the finish, Wilco Kelderman.
It was like we expected, and yeah, we had to plan up front to react, and Jai was good enough to follow, but I wasn't. That was actually the same as the Stelvio stage. Actually, the best two climbers were in front, so in the end, yeah, it was a bit disappointed that I couldn't finish it off, but in the end, I can be also proud with those podium spot, and hopefully Jai can finish it off tomorrow, and then a really nice team result. TT is for sure always okay, so we'll see what happens, but I think it will not be so bad that they can gain another 1.5 minutes. Oh, I think they did the right decision with tactics in the end. I think it's good. So.
Well, I got the impression after the Stelvio stage that Kelderman was a bit annoyed and felt that Hindley should have waited for him. But he was, as I say, very gracious at the finish and, you know, reflecting on a good team performance that should see them finish with two riders on the podium. Just really the top two places to be decided. Who's your money on, Lizzie?
My money's still on Teo. Like I said yesterday, I thought that Teo would take the pink jersey into Milan. I almost got it right. I mean, they're on the same time. And actually, I have to say, I misunderstood the countback process, because in the female Grand Tours, in the female larger tours, we often don't have time trials. And therefore, the countback is done on most stage wins. And if that were the case, then Teo would have gone into the pink jersey. So when he crossed the line, my assumption was that Teo with two wins and Jai with one, Teo would wear pink in Milan. But yeah, I think the odds are on Teo in the time trial tomorrow. Jai knows that he's got more work to do, but we know that anything can happen. Crashes can happen, punctures can happen, misfortune can intervene and hopefully won't. But I think that Teo's got this. And I just think that what an incredible story. You come here without a leader. And it's like my team in the Giro. And so often when you don't have the expectation, you overperform. And sometimes when you do have the expectation, you underperform. And it's been such a great story of kind of new riders coming through and new talent emerging and really a changing of the guard. And actually, speaking of changing of the guard, it was great to see how Nibali never gave up. He obviously didn't have the form and the fitness that he had done in previous years, and he wasn't able to match the young riders, but he never gave up, and he still fought to seventh place, and to be able to be only a few minutes down after 20 days of racing, it's a great performance, and it was a really noble ride, I would say.
Just on the time trial tomorrow, Lizzie, I mean, how helpful is it to Teo Gegenhardt that he's got the current and former world time trial champions Filippo Ganna and Rowan Dennis in the team? I mean, if you were in Teo's position, would you want to be soaking up lots of advice from those two guys, or would you just want to kind of bring down the shutters a bit and concentrate on your own ride?
I think this evening, Teo won't want to focus on it that much. You know, they will, of course, have done their recon. They will, of course, go over in detail every aspect of the course. They'll probably pre-ride it tomorrow morning, I would imagine, especially with it being only 15 point something kilometres. So they will go over it in detail. He may even have a chance to be in the car behind one of the earlier riders. And that can be a really, really valuable thing, because you can drive a course or you can ride it, but when you're not going at race speed, you don't really see the way you should take a corner quite the same way as when you are going at race speed. And so when you watch another rider and you're in the car behind, you can really understand exactly what you've got to do. You see where that rider either gained second or lost seconds, and then you've got it really straight in your head, exactly what you've got to do. So I think the thing you've got to understand about Ineos is that they're going to have done everything that they can prior to this to have optimized everything they can in terms of his position, his nutrition, everything leading up to it. That, you know, they leave no stone unturned, so everything will be covered. I think he's going to be in the best position he can be. He just needs to keep his head screwed on, not let the pressure get to him. And if he wants the advice from his teammates, then he knows it is there. But to be honest, I'm sure he'll have already had a lot of advice from them and gleaned loads of useful information already.
I did see an interview that Dennis gave with Orla Shinawy, where he on Eurosport, where he said that they would, the two of them, be giving Teo some tips. Whether, you know, he'll have done his own work on time trialing and on his time trial bike, he'll have his own routine around that. So maybe doesn't want to fiddle with that too much. Another little tidbit from Orla was that the Team Ineos had a helicopter laid on for Teo, whereas the Team Sunweb riders had a 2.5-3 hour bus journey ahead of them tonight. Again, it could make a little difference, who knows. But, you know, I think in the end, all the comparisons with previous time trials are almost meaningless. It's about how your legs are 3 weeks after 3 weeks of racing, and also,
yeah, and for sure. But recovery is such a huge part of that. We heard from James Knox how he said he was spending more hours on the bike than he was sleeping. And I was thinking at the Lago di Cancano stage, we actually rode there last year in the Giro Rosa, and there's only one way up and down, so the riders probably have to wait to get down until all the Gruppetto riders have come up. And so if you can take a helicopter out, then yeah, you gain a lot from that. And obviously after that stage, Teo didn't have to go and do the podium protocols. So of course, then he gained recovery time there. You forget, you know, when you're sitting around doing the podium protocols, you're up at the top of a mountain and it's freezing cold and you can't get your legs up. You're later for massage, you're later for dinner, everything in the recovery process is delayed. So of course he had to do that for the stage win today, but thankfully for him, he wasn't in the pink jersey, so he wouldn't have had all the extra interviews, so that he can just jump in his helicopter, get straight to Milan, really get straight on with that recovery process, get straight on with the kind of, you know, there's so much media and you get so many messages when something like this happens, and it's sometimes easier to just turn your phone off and ignore it because there are so many distractions and maybe you can't sleep because you're so excited and all of this stuff. And really all you need to do is switch off, sleep, and then wake up the next day and focus on that.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. If you want 25% off all your Science in Sport products, go to scienceinsport.com and enter the code SISCP25. Don't forget their Turbo Plus range with menthol flavors. Keep you cool while you're doing your indoor training. Maybe you and your Zwift ride tomorrow morning, Lionel, maybe you'll be wolfing down the Turbo Plus range.
I will. Yeah.
You will? I can confirm. Well, listen, let's cross to Daniel Frieb in Daniele Friberencini in Spain at the Vuelta a España.
Well, there was plenty of brain power in that leading group today. And Tim Wellens is a clever chap as well. What else today at the Vuelta? We had a couple of chats with Chris Froome, one at the start, one at the finish, about the Giro, which... of course, everyone was keeping a close eye on today. Chris Froome predicted that Teo Gegenhardt would make life very difficult for Sunweb at Sestriere, and that's indeed what happened. And Froome also thinks that Gegenhardt has almost got it in the bag tomorrow in the final time trial. Final bit of gossip from Spain today, chaps. Had a nice conversation this morning with Eusebio Untue, the Movistar team manager, the wily old fox, who's been in charge of Movistar for a long time, and talked to him about Superman Lopez. Chiro has been tweeting that Superman Lopez could well be going to Movistar. Of course, this time last year, or at the Vuelta last year anyway, the last place we expected Superman to ever end up was Movistar, because he called them a bunch of idiots after the way they rode on one particular stage where Superman and some of the Astana boys were delayed behind a crash. Unzue today, he looked to me like a man who just signed Superman, to be honest, or he sounded like it. I pretty directly asked him whether that was the case, and he sort of shrugged and smiled and was kind of enigmatic. But he referred to the incident at last year's Vuelta and said, well, you know, life's too short to bear grudges. And then I then asked him whether that also applied to his well-publicized, well-documented grudge or feud beef with the super agent Giuseppe Acquadro, which sort of led to Quintana leaving Movistar and Amador Eusebio declaring last year they would never sign one of Acquadro's riders again. And Eusebio said, well, there are some things I just can't let go. So no prospect of that thawing anytime soon, I don't think.
Well, Daniel there with some juicy gossip from Spain and his appreciation, admiration of a brainy break today at the Vuelta.
He's always very sniffy about intelligent cyclists.
He doesn't like intelligent cyclists, does he?
Is that why he's not appearing with me on the podcast?
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah. He's, yeah, Roglic, Rog is his kind of prototype.
Or is it because he's challenging me for the best tech show presenter? Because I've noticed that he's been very interested in his tech since the beginning of the Giro.
I think you might you might get him on as a guest presenter at some point, Lizzie.
God help us all.
Well, when I introduced you a couple nights ago, or last night, I said you presented Service Course. If any of you out there haven't listened to Service Course yet, which Lizzie presents with Tom Wally, then do so. It's a brilliant listen. Even if you're not that into tech, which I'm not, it's a brilliant listen. So there you
are. And Richard, yes. This month we're talking all about 3D printing, and tomorrow in the time trial we're going to see a lot of pretty cool 3D printed handlebars. And Tom Wally spoke to the guy who 3D printed Ganna's handlebars.
Wow. I mean, I can't. 3D printing, you've lost me there.
I know. I'm just thinking. What happens if you run out of ink on the eve of a big time trial?
I'm not bright. I'm not bright enough to have been in that break today with Tim Wellens, Guillaume Martin, and Timon Arensman, a 20-year-old on Team Sunweb, who we had on our very last podcast from the Tour de France, because he finished second to Tadej Pogacar at the Tour de l'Avenir a couple of years ago. And I was keen to get his impressions on Pogacar from then. So we phoned him up and spoke to him. Very interesting young guy. Sunweb were kind of reluctant to have him thrust into the spotlight like that, because they're trying to protect him. But at that point, he wasn't sure whether he would go to the Vuelta or not. He was on the long list. Obviously, he was picked for the Vuelta. And to finish third on a day like today in a break like that, very impressive ride. And another very impressive performance from Sunweb. They had many riders in all the moves today at the Vuelta. Such an impressive team and such an impressive young team. You know, we had Mark Hershey at the Tour emerge. Maybe Timon Arensman will be the emerging star at the Vuelta. Who knows? I mean, he's only 20, but that's no barrier these days, is it?
No, absolutely not. And I think actually we see the same in the women's peloton as well. You know, there's a lot of young riders coming through, and there really is across the board a big changing of the guard. And I think often you get that in an Olympic year. And of course, we're kind of in a semi-Olympic year. And maybe it's not quite the same in the men's peloton, because there's not quite as much of a crossover with track and road. But I think in the women's very much so, when you've got an Olympic year, you see a huge crop of riders retiring. And we've seen that, or we will see that, a lot of those riders that were going to retire this year, they've moved their contract on 1 year to retire next year. And that's kind of signaled a changing of the guard with the younger riders coming through and taking this opportunity. And maybe it's for different reasons in the men's peloton that we're seeing this, but we are definitely seeing a number of greats kind of moving on from their period of greatness. And that really is opening the doors for an absolute, yeah, huge wave of talent coming through. And it's really exciting to see, because there's just absolutely shed loads of it. And I think that it's going to make the racing so exciting because all these guys are so hungry and they're all kind of similar age and they're going to be hungry for it for a long, long time and they're going to be fighting it out against each other. And I think that's going to create some really exciting racing.
One of the exciting things about it, I mean, Daniel's just tweeted quite a funny tweet. The banter when Ineos fields this team at next year's tour. Thomas, A. Yates, Bernal, Carapaz, Gegenhardt, Martinez, Sivakov, Port. That's all very well and good. And the sort of depth, the strength and the depth that Ineos have is ridiculous. But then you've got riders like Jai Hindley at the Giro here, just coming from nowhere. Or indeed, Tadej Pogacar at the Tour didn't come from nowhere. But this young talent is just bubbling up. And you can have all the stars.
And it's everywhere.
It's everywhere, exactly. You can have all the stars in the world on your team. But how do you sort of, compete with...
How do you manage it? And how do you manage every single rider's expectations?
Well, because that as well, yeah.
You've got to remember that every rider has their own goals and they're not going to accept just working for somebody the whole time. They're going to expect that at some point in the year they are going to have their own goals that they can work towards. And the thing is, if you don't have that, you have riders moving on to other teams, or you have unhappy riders, or you have rifts within teams. So you need to manage this expectation of every rider, and you need to find a way to give every single rider their opportunity. And that is one hell of a challenge, especially within a team like Ineos. And it's funny because the way that it's turned out this year, the way that they've managed to manage the riders' expectations is actually through really bad luck, because Geraint Thomas crashed out, and then suddenly Tao gets this amazing opportunity, and that is going to give him such a huge boost. But then they've got another possibly Grand Tour winner that they're going to have to deal with next year.
Just gone on to the Vuelta. I mean, you mentioned when we were chatting earlier, Lizzie, before we started recording, the Ineos were a little bit absent in the finale today. Didn't seem to be protecting Carapaz in the same way that, say, Jumbo-Visma were protecting Roglic. There was a little crash at the finish. Well, I say a little crash. I mean, I'm sure it didn't feel little if you were in it. Dan Martin was at the bottom of that. Roglic caused it, we think, not deliberately. But, Lizzie, you've studied the footage.
Yeah, I did indeed. So I think it was actually a bit of a weird stage, because I flicked over once the Giro had finished, and I didn't really understand why Sepp Kuss was allowed to go in the breakaway. And I mean, there was the first breakaway of the day, and Sepp Kuss was in the second breakaway that was behind the first break. But still, I can't understand why they ever let him go away. They should have always had an Ineos rider there if he was going to be in the break. So I didn't really understand that. Then actually, once he'd come back, Ineos were doing a lot of the work on the front. And I just thought, why are you doing this? This is not your responsibility. And then again, right in the final, so maybe about 500-600 meters to go, you came in and there was a sharp right-hand turn, and then it went up the climb to the finish, probably less than that to go, actually. And there's five Jumbo-Visma riders on the front doing the perfect lead-out for Roglic. And Ineos were nowhere to be seen. Of course, it was difficult to spot Carapaz because he was in the mountains jersey, but he had no riders with him. Then they took this right-hand turn. There was a small crash, which later, when you looked at the helicopter shot, was actually due to the fact that Roglic clipped the front wheel of a Movistar rider. And I think it was just a racing incident. I'm not laying blame here at all. It was just the way that Roglic took the corner, went maybe a little bit wider than he thought he was going to. Perhaps the corner was a little bit sharper. He clipped the wheel. Dan Martin went down, bang. And actually, I thought, oh God, Dan Martin's going to lose a lot of time here, because I didn't think the race was going to get was going to have the 3 kilometer rule applied, because it did have an uphill finish. Lionel and I had a bit of a discussion about this before we started recording, because the 3 kilometer rule applies in the last 3 kilometers of a race, so that if there is an incident which a rider is involved in, then they get the same time as the group that they were with when the incident happened. But this rule only applies in sprint finishes, and the organisation will deem before the beginning of the race which stages this applies to and which it doesn't. Because this finish had an uphill kind of kicker to the finish, I didn't actually think that the 3 kilometre rule would apply, but it turns out it did. And at the finish, I think originally Roglic was on 2:13, one rider I think behind was on 2:14, and then the main bunch was on 2:17. In the end, the whole bunch was neutralised to 213. I'm not quite sure that was the right decision, because the way that it played out, Roglic did get a gap, and then there was a gap to the second rider, and then there was a gap to the bunch. So my feeling really is that the commissaires should have put Roglic on 13, the second rider on 14, and then everybody who was neutralised, for instance, Dan Martin, who came down in the crash, they should have been on 17. I think it's a really difficult thing to do. The other part of the rule is that actually you're only supposed to get the neutralised time if you are affected and in the crash. If you're behind it and you're slowed down due to the fact that the crash has happened, you shouldn't actually be neutralised. And looking at the stage results, I think it was down to 50-something place that they neutralised it. And Tom Dumoulin was the final rider on the same time. No way should he have been on the same time, because he was one of the riders who did the lead out and pinged off and would have been, I don't know, 30 seconds more or back. So it's a difficult one for the jury, but
it's a very tough one, that, because, you know, Dan Martin, the whole point of the rule is to ensure fairness. And Martin could have argued, well, he was with Roglic when he crashed. You know,
absolutely. But the rule also says the same time as the bunch, and the bunch were on 217. Roglic was ahead of the bunch. I completely agree with you. It's really, really bad luck for Martin, because he could have won the bunch sprint, but he didn't. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a tough one, but those are the rules.
He's bigger fish to fry than fourth on the stage.
Yeah, but hang on. No, because Roglic opened a gap there, and he, if this Vuelta gets down to a position where they're tied on time going into a deciding stage, Roglic will go, well, where's my 3 seconds?
That would never happen, Lionel.
No, it would never happen.
Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Well, listen, we should wrap things up there, shouldn't we? Because we've got a big day ahead of us tomorrow.
Just very lastly, Rich, just looking at Jai Hindley versus Teo Gegenhardt. We can't call a head-to-head in the time.
Yeah, how have they got on in previously when they've gone head-to-head on the final day of a 3-week Grand Tour?
Well,
with one of them in the leader's jersey.
Well, of course,
what's the precedent?
That's never happened, of course. Just looking at their past results, the biggest victories for them prior to this Giro, Jai Hindley has won the Herald Sun Tour in Australia and the Tour de Fuzhou in China, and Teo Gegenhardt has won a couple of stages of the Tour of the Alps. And for some reason, I don't know why, and I'm sure there's many, many other riders who've done it, but I just thought of Felice Gimondi, who of course won the 1965 Tour de France out of the blue. He'd won the Tour de l'Avenir previously, but really hadn't won a proper pro race prior to winning the Tour de France. And that's
so
they're in that.
One of them could be the new Gimondi.
Could be.
Jai Hindley sounds almost like Gimondi.
Felice Jai Hindley.
With an Australian accent. maybe, slightly. But no, I mean, listen, when this race started 3 weeks ago, nobody could have predicted that the podium would be Teo Gegenhardt, Jai Hindley and Wilco Kelderman. Nobody.
No.
Thanks for that.
Not even us.
It doesn't need any further statement, that. You're absolutely right.
On that note, let's wrap it up, and we'll be back tomorrow with you again, Lizzie. Thanks very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you both.